One of our values here at Park is to renew the city, and we have a congregation that really tries to plug into the neighborhoods and serve. We have 1,300 people who serve outside the walls of the church at least once a month. You know, we also try to start new ministries. We've started 5 new ministries in the last year that are serving all different parts of the city, and we like to have convened conversations. So whether it be immigration reform or issues surrounding education or tonight land development, this is an important time for our community. Decisions that can get made will last for years and decades. So it's important that everybody's voice is heard, and we are so glad to be blessed to have a room where more voices can be heard. So thank you guys so much for coming. And there will be time, because we're going till 9 o'clock. So the presentation, I'm told, will leave at least 1 hour and 45 minutes or 2 hours for to have a full-throated conversation. And in the spirit of the season, and just what the church would have us command to sort of follow the golden rule that we address each other and listen and treat each other as we would like to be treated. So there ends the sermon. Thank you, and with that, I'd like to introduce Alderman Hopkins.
Thanks, Mike, and thank you once again for opening up your beautiful home and allowing, as you said, all voices to be heard. We had a press conference earlier that some alternative viewpoints were presented, and it's certainly appropriate that that's part of this event tonight in this facility. You guys have just been very kind and very inclusive, and we appreciate that. So I'd like to begin by welcoming everyone, as Mike did, but I want to welcome you individually, in recognition of the fact that there's quite a number of separate and distinct groupings of participants here tonight. So I want to welcome you with that acknowledgement, and I will start with the opponents of this project. And I want to start by welcoming you in particular and letting you know that the format change for tonight's meeting is in recognition of the criticism that we received after the last one when there was no open session at the end. There was a question and answer session. For those of you who are here, you know that. But the question and answer session was broken out in smaller groups. And a lot of the feedback that we got in the aftermath of that centered on opposition to that format. And when I asked people who approached me, what was the question that you wanted to ask that you didn't have the opportunity to do so, what really came out was not so much questions, but statements. People wanted to express their opposition. People wanted to explain their opposition, and they wanted to do so in front of the General Assembly. So this is a democracy. That's an appropriate request. I want to apologize for the last meeting where that request was not honored. It will be honored tonight. So it's not a question and answer session in particular. It's an open mic session. If you have a question, great. If you simply want to stand up and express your opposition to any element of this plan or to all of this plan, you have the right to do so, and your right will be honored tonight. So thank you for being here. We heard you. The second group that I want to acknowledge is the group of supporters that I know are here tonight. I actually just talked to a few of them. Congratulations on your courage for showing up at a meeting like this. You're outnumbered, so I think you can tell that at the outset. But you also have the right to be heard. And if you want to express your support for this project and explain why you think it's something we should do, you have the right to do it. And as Mike just said, I think we all will be civil in this room, and we'll all be respectful of all the opinions that are here tonight. The third group, then, would be the group of people who don't necessarily have their minds made up yet. And I hope tonight that you'll see enough detail to be able to make a decision whether or not this is something that is worthy of your support. The last hearing we had on this was insufficient. We all know that. Those of you who were here were quite clear in your criticism or from the lack of detail that was provided. I think we have corrected that problem. At least I hope we have. So we're going to see the details. As you know, the saying goes, the devil's in the details, or sometimes he's in a woodpile, right? little reference to some of the other groups that are here tonight. But he's also in the details. So we're going to see those details tonight, and I'm sure there will be more questions. This is not the last public forum that will be held for this proposal. There will be many other opportunities. My office has conducted a survey. The Sheffield Neighbors Organization has conducted a survey, and my office will be conducting yet another one. So that will be the third one in response to the new proposal that you'll see here tonight. We're going to continue to gauge public sentiment. It's very important that you stay with us. This process is evolving. You're going to see the difference tonight, and we're not done. More to come, so stand by. I also want to address some of the people who are here tonight in opposition to the proposed TIF. That is not on the agenda tonight, but I do want to briefly just address it. I've heard your concerns as well. I have several questions of my own. If you have questions about what this TIF proposal includes, I urge you to go to my website, aldermanhopkins.com, submit your question. There's an easy way to do it. You'll see it on the homepage. I will not allow this TIF proposal to move forward. I will not schedule the next hearing on this TIF proposal until those questions are answered. They're out there, and we're going to get them answered. So please join me in making sure that all the details are covered. There is one thing I do want to say just at the outset, and I've said this repeatedly. I'm going to continue to say it. For the TIF opponents that are here, you've already scored a partial victory. First of all, I actually eliminated a TIF last month. I may be the only alderman who did that this year. It was a TIF I inherited. I took a look at what it was doing. It was not scheduled to expire until 2032, but in my mind, it didn't pass the infamous but-for test. Nothing was happening. It seemed to be inactive anyway, and there was no need for it. So I took action and eliminated it. And that's just to show that, you know, TIFs are neither inherently good nor inherently bad. They're a tool. And like any tool, they can be used for good purposes. They can be used for bad purposes. And there are many, many examples in Chicago, too many, unfortunately, of TIFs being used for bad purposes. The TIF we're talking about for the Lincoln Yards proposal, if it gets approval, will only get approval with conditions imposed on it to make sure that under no circumstances ever in its life can it be used for private subsidy, period. That's non-negotiable. So to the TIF opponents, you've got that already. We'll see what else we can do going forward. There will be another hearing scheduled. I haven't scheduled it yet, and I'm not going to schedule it until we've addressed how we accomplish that. So with that in mind, I would like to get tonight's presentation started. This is my meeting. My name is on the screen, but this is not my presentation, and I think that also needs to be made clear. I actually put myself in that middle category that I mentioned earlier of people who are here with their minds open. It would be inappropriate for me to prejudge anything. I'm keeping an open mind about this. Nothing that you're going to see tonight has earned my support. I am still in the same position that many of you are. I need more information in order to make a decision. Let's hope we get some of that tonight. I look forward to your questions and your comments at the end. And with that, I'd like to introduce the managing principal from Sterling Bay, Andy Glore. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Before I get going, I want to thank Alderman Hopkins, and I also want to thank Parks City Community Church for allowing us to have this event tonight. You know, this is by way of background, for people who don't know me, I've lived in Lincoln Park for 24 years. I've lived on Sedgwick. I've lived above Black Duck on Halsted. I lived on Dayton and Fremont and Belmont, so I've been all over the place. So this is my home. I'm now raising my family in Lincoln Park, so I feel like this is a neighborhood I understand, and the intentions are to take Lincoln Park and Bucktown and Wicker Park and improve it. Additionally, not only am I a local here, the entire team is within a mile of this site. From Skidmore to my other partners at Sterling Bay, this is a project that is not foreign to us, and this is not a neighborhood that's new to us. You know, we sit in the traffic. We avoid the potholes, and my kids play in the same field as you do, so I understand it. I also understand that this is a big change. And understandably, when there's this big of a change, it makes people nervous. And I also understand it is very difficult, very, very difficult to get a unanimous opinion on exactly what we should do. But it's important to know that our heart's in the right place, and we think after 2 years we've done a pretty good job. And believe me, in terms of making people people happy, I spent Thanksgiving with 33 family members out in Utah, and that was a tough group, I'm telling you. It was very difficult to keep my family happy, so I think it would probably be very difficult to keep everyone happy here, but we're going to try really hard. So for tonight, I just want to highlight some major changes, because we submitted our plan in July. And we went back to the drawing board, and we listened. We had 24 different community meetings for 2 years and met with everyone one-on-ones. We had coffees. I even had people drop off stuff in my house. They didn't leave their name, but thank you for that if you're out there. So obviously this is something that's very important to everyone here, and it's obviously going to have a long-term implication for the neighborhoods. So before I hand it over to Skidmore to get into the details of the plan, I want to highlight a few things because there's just some misinformation out there. As it relates to the TIF, I agree with the alderman. Okay. Sterling Bay is going to pay for the infrastructure. And then when our project is successful, if it is successful, we get paid back over time. And then the cost for that infrastructure is going to be paid by Lincoln Yard. So it's not going to increase people's taxes, which I've read on a variety of different things online. So this is something we front the money, we get paid back over time based on the increment for Lincoln Yards. Live Nation, okay. The president of Live Nation is a long-term resident of the neighborhood. He lives a few blocks from the site. And, you know, they want to create something special. They want to create a tourist destination, which I think will help a lot of the businesses in the area. But by no means do we have any intent of buying the hideout. You know, 2 months ago, myself and one of my partners had some beers with the owners of the hideout, and we talked about how we could give them the land so they can continue on with their festival, if we can help their business out at all. I mean, if you look at what we've done in the West Loop, trying to create an authentic neighborhood is harder when you have all new construction. And so if you can hang on to the existing buildings there, it just adds to the authenticity, which is something that I think is really important to the long-term success of the project. General Iron. We don't own General Iron. We don't control General Iron. I would love General Iron not to be in our neighborhood. I would love General Iron to be a park. But that's not part of the conversation today. We're talking about our 54 acres. It's a conversation we can have at a later date. But I just want to clarify that, because there's been a lot of information out there that somehow we control it, and people want to make it a park. It's just something we just don't control. And then open space. Okay, this is something that's really important. You know, I have a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old, and they play sports, and I drive half my life all over the state. And so we pushed the open space from 24% to just under 40%. So 40% of the site, which is a big number, it's 21 acres, will be open. So just by context, Maggie Daly Park is 20 acres, and Oz Park's 13 acres. So by adding 21 acres, it's really, really important. And we have dog parks and a crazy, you know, kid park, and we have, you know, athletic fields and all sorts of stuff. So listen, I get it. I want that more than anything else. I live a few blocks away, so that's a very, very important thing. So I'm going to hand it over to Doug at Skidmore, who's going to dig into the details, and then we're all going to stick around and happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Great. Good evening, and thank you all for coming tonight. And thanks also to the Park Community Church for accommodating all of us. In July, we introduced a vision for what we call Lincoln Yards. And as you can see, it's only a portion of the larger modernization of the North Branch corridor. Prior to that, a comprehensive plan was developed by the City of Chicago and a team of consultants that identified three key goals, focusing on the economic benefits, focusing on the improvements to long-neglected transportation needs, and building upon the unique corridor, its heritage, and the importance of the natural environment. For those of you that are perhaps not familiar, perhaps not many, This is a view of the site looking south. Lincoln Yards North is right in the foreground on the left. That's Cortland extending across the bottom of this image, looking back to the city. And then Lincoln Yards South, just across the river, the former fleet management site. Here's a view of Lincoln Yard North, right at the bend in the river, looking up to Webster and the neighborhoods further north. One of the key principles was the importance of economic benefit and how that would also drive community benefit. And we went over many of these numbers in the last meeting, and Andy just shared how many of those have only increased over that time. But we also understand the importance this project has for the city of Chicago to reconnect the community, your communities, to the Chicago River, the creation of jobs, the opportunities to contract with small women and minority-owned business, and all of the other things that go with that in terms of job training, the commitments to affordable housing, and the significant revenue and investment that's put back into the city. Over the last several months, we've worked very hard to advance the master plan and many of the details, knowing that we needed to prioritize and align these investments and to show how they reinforce and benefit the community. We heard very clearly those priorities to address traffic congestion, as well as other infrastructure improvements, the need for publicly accessible open space, and then to share more detail on the intentions for building height and massing that will define the character of this place. So tonight, we have a presentation that will provide an update on the master plan and more specifically show the what and the how. In planning for such a large urban site, we started by integrating the site back into the urban fabric of the city by prioritizing neglected infrastructure and focusing on new roads and important connections. Extending Dominick from Webster on the north down to North Avenue, connecting Kingsbury for that one block south of Cortland, unlocking transportation options further down Kingsbury, and anticipating the extension of Armitage across the river to eventually connect with Southport, that this approach creates an integrated network to more efficiently move people while mitigating additional impacts to the existing street network. We talked about the extension of the 606 and how we could get that under the freeway, under the metro tracks, over the river, and the addition of a Concord Street pedestrian bicycle bridge that will connect to the existing bicycle network and encourage a walkable and bikeable community. Centered at this bend in the river, there will be a new 8.4-acre public park. This park is oriented to be south-facing, opening to the river, and the future Riverwalk. Extending from the park up and down the river, there will be a new Riverwalk, providing pedestrian and bicycle access within a continuous 30-foot zone. This publicly accessible Riverwalk is around 3.6 acres. Finally, numerous public plazas and greenways have been located to create a permeable and cohesive public realm. Collectively, over 20 acres of publicly accessible open space serves as the framework for future development. And to note, this does not include the field associated with the stadium. The emphasis on the public realm establishes a well-scaled, walkable series of blocks that allow for a more porous transition and connectivity to the surrounding area. These smaller blocks also allow for a range of buildings, both in height and in form, enhancing the importance of light and air between taller buildings and access to the park. The master plan that we've designed with a larger team of consultants, many here today, is designed to support a mixed-use district. Residential uses are planned along the eastern edge of the park, there in yellow, transitioning and integrating with the community to the east. The majority of commercial uses will be located along the Dominick River corridor, extending the momentum from the 1515 Webster, or as we like to call it, the C.H. Robinson building, there in blue. And lastly, the integration of expanded transit, a new metro station, and other multimodal options are intended to promote additional ways to get to the site, to get through the site, and reduce the reliance on the automobile. So we wanted to take some time to talk a little bit more on how we are addressing the issues of transportation and traffic congestion. We have been working very closely with the city, the Department of Transportation, and other agencies to accelerate the much-needed transportation investments both on and off the site. A comprehensive traffic study commissioned by Sterling Bay has been completed and is currently being reviewed by the City of Chicago. Several key recommendations from the report support the benefits from an integrated development and shared parking approach, and we'll go into that in just a moment. That many of these improvements will expand and enhance the efficiency of the existing street network. The report also identifies and prioritizes key intersections and traffic signal improvements needed to help mitigate both existing traffic and future traffic volumes. To clarify the benefits of these improvements, the extension of both Dominick and Kingsbury allow for two additional ways to move north-south without using Clybourne or Elston. Together with CDOT, we've also focused on how we design these new streets and how we improve existing streets in the area by focusing on complete streets. What are those? These streets and this approach is a more balanced street design that prioritizes pedestrian safety, the integration of bike lanes, as well as drop-offs for rideshare, while maintaining an appropriate number of lanes to accommodate projected traffic demands. Oops, let me go back. The master plan explored new ideas too, and one of those ideas is the design of Dominick as a shared street, similar to what the city has recently completed up at Argyle Street in the Uptown neighborhood. As important, however, are the prioritization of improvements to move east-west across the river. The extension of Armitage Avenue across the river will more efficiently distribute traffic and mitigate congestion on both Webster and Cortland. As I mentioned earlier in the traffic study, one of the recommendations were for several intersection improvements, and that these are critical for both improved traffic management as well as pedestrian safety. And this was something we heard very clearly from many of the meetings we had with residents in the area. A redesigned intersection to fix the spaghetti at Armitage, Ashland, and Elston is a priority. CDOT is currently following up with engineering studies to expedite the design and delivery of this important project. And I think we shared this in the last public meeting, but as demonstrated through similar improvements north at Fullerton, the redesign of Armitage, Ashland, and Elston will reduce travel times, but also improve connectivity. The master plan has been designed to support and enhance a transit-based development, to provide easy connections to existing and future transit options within a walkable and pedestrian-focused environment. In many of our meetings, traffic associated with events at the stadium and the resulting parking has been a concern of many residents. An event management plan has been prepared and is currently being reviewed by the city. This stadium mobility plan identifies the availability of on-site parking resources within a 5 to 10 minute walk of the stadium, as well as the accommodation of rideshare, additional shuttles, and connections to Metra and surrounding CTA stations. The result of this comprehensive analysis has produced a priority list of infrastructure projects, with the goal to expedite the design and delivery of these critical improvements in the master plan. Phasing. One of the key concerns that we heard is for greater clarity on both the timing and the process to align infrastructure investments with the pace of development. Several layers of infrastructure, some of which we've just discussed, from new streets and existing street improvements to delivering other multimodal options, have been defined and mapped as part of the master plan. Of these, several initial investments located primarily on the north end of the site, extending from C.H. Robinson, require the extension of Dominick to Cortland, as you can see here in red. So it currently exists up to that point by the second building and then would be extended to Cortland with a new traffic signal at Dominick and Cortland and another traffic signal at Webster and Dominick. This initial phase also looks at the construction of Armitage Avenue, which is the lower red street going east-west, and improvements to both Southport and Dickens that are necessary to support two new office buildings and a shared parking garage. So as you can see, C.H. Robinson, CHR, is the existing building on the site today. The two office buildings just south of that along the Riverwalk, and then a shared parking garage just to the east with the P on it. The timing of any future phase will be influenced by the completion of key infrastructure projects as well as market conditions. And in working with the city, we have created a phasing strategy within each of these zones. So a north zone, which is primarily everything north of the river, a west zone, which is, again, primarily the former Sims site just to the west, south of Cortland and east of Elston, and a south zone, which includes the stadium, another shared parking garage, and future entertainment uses. These improvements will be necessary before any development is completed in each of these areas. Let me take a moment to introduce not only a close friend, but a great collaborator. Sarah Ostheimer is a principal at James Corner Field Operations in New York City. They are one of the premier landscape practices, if not in the United States, in the world. And we're really excited to have Sarah here to share their design work on the publicly accessible open space. Sure, sure. Let me see if this works. You bet, you bet. You see the red? Sorry, can you see the red pointer? I'd walk up and reach. It's right here. So I had mentioned the extension of the Concord pedestrian bridge, and it's really right in this area at the south end of the stadium. The thin building right here and the one just north of that. Those are the two primary buildings in the entertainment zone. Could we hold some of the questions to the end when I can have some of the experts? Here. Sorry.
So I'd like to talk about publicly accessible open space. Publicly accessible open space at Lincoln Yards is vital and offers new opportunities for recreation, play, community gathering, experiencing nature, and celebrating urban life. At Field Operations, we love Chicago, this great city of neighborhoods, and have spent a lot of time here for this project, for the South Branch Ideas Lab, and multiple recent phases of work at Navy Pier. Our Lincoln Yards team has met with numerous individuals and community groups like the Friends of the River, Friends of the Bloomingdale Trail, and neighborhood associations, among others. The current design of the publicly accessible open space is very much inspired by their feedback. I'm thrilled to report that since the project was first presented this summer, the slide on the screen shows a couple of images that were shared last July. The amount of publicly accessible open space has increased, and the team has continued to strengthen connections to neighborhoods, the types and range of open space amenities, while maintaining flexibility for events and programming. In aggregate, open space has grown from 13.4 acres to over 20 acres, 38% of Sterling Bay's total land holdings, broken down as follows: 8.4 acres of park, 8.5 acres of plazas, and 3.6 acres of Riverwalk. Our latest concept plan shows the project positioned between Lincoln Park, Bucktown, Wicker Park, Old Town, and farther-reaching neighborhoods. It is an important nexus or connector, which is focused on the river. Lincoln Yards South is a hub for recreation, while Lincoln Yards North features an extended 606 and Central Park. A one-mile river walk lines the entire waterfront of each area. In addition to the project's incredible location, we are inspired and intrigued by the site's industrial history and have inventoried site artifacts for reuse and expression within the project. But acknowledging the primary opportunity to rediscover the river amidst these artifacts, taking advantage of the bend in the river, the potential to look down its length to the Chicago skyline and celebrate it anew as a natural resource within this urban context. Our initial phases of work at Lincoln Yards North, which we've been focused on with the team over the past several months, offers a wide range of spaces that will enliven the area and speak to the uniqueness of this place. To the north, at number one, is the slipway. At number two, the Foundry Playground. At number three, the Dominic Promenade that builds on the Dominic Street that Doug spoke about. At number four, a continuous river walk. At number five, the Central Park and a series of hills. At number six, the extension of 606. At number seven, a great lawn. And at number eight, a series of meadow terraces along the edge of the river. I'm going to walk you through the site, starting from the north, where a frame marks the tree-lined entrance at the Southport Gateway. Just beyond, the ladle yard features trees planted in large ladles mounted on tracks, allowing for a variety of flexible shaded conditions and taking advantage of these incredible artifacts salvaged from the site. Moving south and into the site, the slipway features flush rails and water scrims, detailed attention to materiality, which foreshadow the river beyond. And at the end of the slipway, a dramatic overlook allows people to get close to the water and establishes a window into the site from the river itself. And just a note that the buildings in these views have not yet been designed and just represent massing envelopes. The Riverwalk itself shall be a continuous recreational trail for cyclists and other pedestrians, and for the majority of its length be bolstered by these resilient green terraces that step down to the river and are punctuated by additional smaller overlooks. In the middle of the site, the Dominic Promenade, as Doug mentioned, this complete street, is special, designed with pedestrians in mind. On one side, as in this image, is active retail and sidewalk cafes, and on the other, at the park, a more porous, open, and invitational edge, a place in and of itself with this double row of majestic specimens. The park features a soft and hilly landscape that frames views south to the river, an urban oasis. Surrounding paths and ringing most hills will be stunning and seasonally dynamic meadow gardens. And nested within the hills are destinations and amenities like the Foundry Playground, which offer an immersive environment for discovery and play. This tall hill with boulders and a spaghetti of tube slides is reminiscent of the incredible ducting that made the site's original foundry building remarkable. The Furnace Garden offers year-round destination for informal socialization, sitting and relaxing, and is reminiscent of the fiery process that once took place on site to produce steel. South of Cortland, aligned with the river, is the sloping Great Lawn and deck overlooking an incredible city skyline. Lincoln Yard South is across the river and features sports fields, two soccer fields, and a baseball diamond, places for children, for weekend sports. And together, North and South offer a holistic park experience. Back on the north side of the river, just below the overlooked deck, a series of three generously sized meadow terraces step down to the edge of a newly active river. They will be distinctively planted, seasonal spectacles. They will be new places for urban habitat. We imagine the potential for herons, monarchs, otters, and box turtles. And they will offer endless opportunity to engage people of all ages for discovery, delight, and educational programming. One final image of the publicly accessible open space from the air looks back on Lincoln Yards North, a place that celebrates the river as a natural resource, with the meadow terraces, the Great Lawn, a new pedestrian bridge that crosses Cortland Street, the Foundry Playground, and Slipway. Together, these features and places compose a site that will be transformative, a new green oasis, a place to bring people together, and to celebrate the variety and vibrancy of urban life in Chicago.
This was really important for us to understand also how the attention to detail, the craft that the landscape team has brought forward, the creativity, and how within the master plan we can emphasize the relationship of future buildings to reinforce the character and the quality of that public realm. This was a very clear guideline and principle within the North Branch Framework Plan. And what's unique about Lincoln Yards is the ability to look at multiple blocks simultaneously as we help to shape larger open space, but also the appropriate relationship to future building and building envelopes. A key concept of that study, and one we support, is to locate taller buildings closer to the expressway, that we step buildings down in height towards Clybourne and the community. In July, we talked about the possibility of buildings up to 800 feet. And although it was early, the concept was to disperse the tallest buildings to two or three key sites. So on the left here, there was a building of around 800 feet at the north end of the park Sarah just walked through. There was another building at approximately 800 feet just south of the river. And then many buildings that were at 600-700 plus feet. We have since reduced building heights across the site and continue to shape the buildings. And because we can't really read the numbers on the right, let me walk through some of the enhancements and refinements that we've done. As part of the request to increase open space, we have relocated a building out from the park, highlighted here on the left in pink. So that was removed and relocated completely out of the park, which provided public access and a clear view from Southport. This thing doesn't really work. Right through here. Into the park. In addition, we have lowered the height of the building to no more than 650 feet. So the reduction in height is shown in pink here for just that tower. By redistributing the density and further shaping the form of future buildings, we've been able to reduce over 100 floors of height across the remainder of the site. So similar to the last drawing, the sort of earlier proposal on the left, and we were able to further shape and remove floors from buildings to bring the heights down, again, the maximum building height now only of 650 feet and only in that one location. Based on feedback from many of our meetings with residents, as well as the aldermen, we have developed other views to show how these refinements both integrate and transition with the community. So this is a view looking west towards the expressway and the concept to increase height as we move west of the river, towards the river and west of the river. Another view looking north, similar to the view we had shown before. And then a view from Lincoln Park looking back towards Bucktown, the stepping down in height along Kingsbury Street, the spacing between the buildings to allow more permeability and access to light and air. Finally, to reinforce and sustain the principles, the urban design goals over time, the city had requested that the team develop a set of guidelines as part of the master plan and would be attached to that master plan. These guidelines focus on the quality, ensuring the quality of the public realm, how we approach the design of streets that don't happen in the first phase and that we continue to commit to that quality and the emphasis on the pedestrian, that we understand very clearly how these streets and expanded sidewalks relate to the buildings to create not only a welcoming pedestrian environment, but to create a vibrant and active urban realm. And that as it relates to taller buildings, building height, and land use, we developed a smaller set of sub-areas as shown on this map. A smaller scale of understanding and definition as terms of the use and the height within those sub-areas. And just as a point of reference, sub-area B here on the south, just north of the stadium site, and sub-area D are reserved exclusively for the public park. Let me take a moment to introduce one more aspect of the presentation and introduce my partner at SOM, Scott Duncan, to present the approach to the first phase, both development and design of the buildings. Scott.
Thanks, Doug. Thank you. So very excited to tell you about the first buildings that we'll see at Lincoln Yards. As Doug said, before the buildings come the infrastructure. So to reorient you here in the plan, the red line there, north-south, is the extension of Dominick Street. So that comes first, and that connects Cortland to Webster. So there's this kind of decongestion that happens immediately. I live a few blocks from the site. I know what it's like to drive through there. It's a real mess. Day one, we see the Riverwalk, the green line headed north-south. So there's a pedestrian and bicycling path potential immediately, and that serves the new buildings, which are shown in a cluster of three just south of the current 1515 Webster, C.H. Robinson building, headquarters there. So why three buildings? It was important to create a destination on day one, create a sense of neighborhood immediately. So defining the streetscape. I mean, at this point, the site is so empty that putting a single building there really wouldn't be the right thing. It wouldn't achieve that. So we're standing now on the Webster Street Bridge looking south. You can see the skyline in the distance. And with the C.H. Robinson headquarters in the foreground, you see the strategy that Doug described, where the massing, the height, steps away from the lower-rise portions of the neighborhood. So the first two buildings are just to the south of that, planned as office buildings. And in thinking about, the waterfront, we're referencing global cities that are rediscovering their own formerly working waterfronts. So industrial waterfronts that are being redeveloped in very active ways. And I think, again, as a Lincoln Park resident, this idea of stitching together Bucktown and Lincoln Park is a real win from my perspective. Currently, the site is a gap. So, these are the kinds of spaces we're thinking of. And in order to conceive of the architecture, we're thinking about the former industrial character of the site, but also, as you see the Montgomery Ward building on the left, 600 West Chicago, you've got this tradition of warehouses that were along the riverfront, these kind of big loft buildings that in some cases have been repurposed for other uses. Why? Because they have a really good flexible bones to them, like a loft building. So in thinking of the inspiration for the architecture, we're really looking to the loft, but thinking about how that could be updated for the 21st century. So today's workplace isn't just a plain vanilla office floor plate, right? It wants outdoor space and activity at its base. So you see how open spaces and amenity terraces and so on have been integrated at heights, above street level and looking out back towards the downtown to the skyline. So, these elements kind of located within are part of that office experience. Critical thing is how these loft buildings engage the ground plane and the public realm around. So, very porous, active ground level plazas, connections between the buildings out from the street level. So that'd be Dominick, just shown. Now we're looking north and you can see the Webster Street Bridge here. So the new Dominick will be coming through here. And we want that kind of street level activity. Now, thinking about sustainability as the other way that we really make these lofts 21st century. So, a full complement of strategies from daylight dimming and solar responsive facades, but planted roofs, high quality and high performance HVAC systems to reduce the overall energy consumption, smart building controls, renewable materials. But we're really trying to rethink the loft for the 21st century. And so doing it, one of the things that we're really excited about is applying some of the research that we've done into concrete technology and casting technology that would allow us to reduce the amount of material in the building, thereby reducing its carbon footprint and creating some pretty unexpected, but we think bold interior workspaces within the building. So this gives you a sense of that industrial loft character that we're we're seeking. So back down to the Riverwalk level, we're looking south, and you can see the Cortlandt Street Bridge there in the distance. The spaces between the buildings have been a real focus for us. So connection from Dominic, which is here, to the Riverwalk is publicly accessible. So these are the ways in which the public passes from the streetscape out into these kind of overlook river rooms that Sarah's team has been developing. And there were some appropriately raised questions about bird-friendly design. So we can do things with the facade here that allow for mitigating those reflections that, frankly, cause the birds to hit the buildings. And it's really within the lower 40 feet of the building, as we know. So we're trying to be sensitive to this consideration of bird path and bird flight. So now looking north, we're at what will be the future extension of Armitage, and of course looking north on the Riverwalk with the river at the left. So in the future, a planned extension of Armitage over the river will be just off the page to our far left. But you can get a sense of the kind of porch-like character, this porous kind of multi-level activation of the Riverwalk with destination restaurants that serve the community as well as the occupants of the building. Now, on the Dominic side, you know, we're envisioning that kind of active retail character that we see on streets like Armitage. So that kind of neighborhood retail, and in this case, we're looking north on Dominic. So this is the character of New Dominic. And then I don't think I've ever been as excited about a parking garage in my life, but this one is very cool. The lower level is a series of shops, and that relates to kind of, again, the active streetscape and the neighborhood scale. And then above, parking levels are expressed as this kind of sculptural industrial element sitting on a roof terrace. So the roof terrace is just above street level. And the purpose in doing this, in having a central parking garage, is to essentially make the buildings around have less of a parking requirement. The cars can go here instead of within the buildings themselves, which means that they can be more have a more human quality at the street level. You're not faced with a big parking structure, that doesn't have an active front. And we're planning it for future build out in a world with less automobiles, for example, building it out as an office building. So again, a kind of flexible structure for the future. So I hope that gives you a window into that might be something that we talk about in more detail after Keith sums it up. Okay. Yeah. Not hiding. Thanks.
So thank you. Thanks, everyone, for being here. I'm Keating Crown. I'm principal at Sterling Bay. We're on the verge of an ample time for Q&A, which we're all eagerly looking forward to, I know. We're really excited about delivering 20 total acres of publicly accessible open space. About 40% of the site. So, I live in Bucktown with my family, not far from the site. As Andy said, I sit in the same traffic that you do. I have trouble finding field space for my kids. So I get it. You've seen this slide. I won't show it again. We have an expert panel that's going to come up, and we'll try our best to answer all of the questions in the roughly 2 hours that we have left. But first, I want to touch on a couple points that have clearly risen to the surface over the last week or so. First on open space and public access to parks in the future. We've offered to convey our parkland to the Chicago Park District, but due to their budget challenges and limited resources for operations and park maintenance, they're unable to take on the burden of maintaining the additional park space. The public open space sub-areas and obligations regarding construction and timing will be codified in the plan development. In addition, the plan development will require the park and river walk to be open to the public during typical park district hours. The plan development impacts the property regardless of who owns it. Therefore, if Sterling Bay exits the development in some sort, future owners will also be subject to these same requirements. In addition, and given the feedback we've received and concerns we've heard, we've committed to go a step further than recent precedent and will record a document on title that addresses development, access, and maintenance of the open space. That document will be negotiated and approved by the city's law department prior to issuance of building permits. Second, the proposed city transit way on Kingsbury. As Andy mentioned earlier, we don't own the land that General Iron sits on. We're in favor, in concept, of the North Branch Preserve. The city's Kingsbury Transit Way was a feature of the city's North Branch framework planning process and was not an initiative of Sterling Bay or the Lincoln Yards team. It's been included as a component of the North Branch framework plan since early in its development. We've consistently heard about the need for additional transit options to serve the community, and we think a direct route from the North Branch to the Loop makes a lot of sense and would be a positive step. The establishment of the city's transit way does not prevent a park along the river and would actually help provide access to a park for visitors. But this is outside our control or our planned development. Our development does not prevent a park along the east bank of the river. Finally, there's been a lot of talk and emails and posts this week about a model. That model was a creation done very quickly in our pursuit of Amazon. For better or for worse, Amazon's not coming here. And that model that's been circulated does not represent what you saw tonight or the plan development submitted to the city. In addition, there's been reference to multiple Willis Towers being proposed on the site, where claims of 50,000 to 70,000 new people locating here. As you've seen tonight, our plan includes one signature tower at a height under 650 feet, and the plan submitted estimates 23,000 permanent jobs and a cap of 5,000 residential units. With that, we're going to get to the Q&A in a second here.